On Sunday, March 4th, 2007, a television special entitled The Lost Tomb of Jesus aired nationwide on the Discovery Channel. Those who produced the special argued that 10 small bone boxes, called ossuaries, were discovered in 1980 in the Jerusalem suburb of Talpiot, and they supposedly held the remains of Jesus of Nazareth and his family members. This assumption was based on the six names found in the tomb, including Jesus, son of Joseph, who supposedly refers to Jesus of Nazareth, Maria, supposedly Jesus' mother Mary, Matthew or Matthew, although not a family member of Jesus, supposedly a relative of Mary, Mariamne y Mara, which supposedly refers to Mary Magdalene, who supposedly was married to Jesus, Yehuda or Judas, son of Jesus, who although not mentioned in the New Testament, is supposedly the son of Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and Joseph, who supposedly refers to one of Jesus' brothers, Joses. The assertion that the odds are 600 to 1 that the Talpiot tomb is the tomb of Jesus rests on the assumption that the people named in this tomb are the family members of Jesus. But scholars say there's a problem with attributing any of these names to Jesus' family. First, the name Jesus is far from certain. Some scholars think it is a totally different name. If the first name is not Yeshua or Jesus, then this whole new radical theory collapses. Second, there is no indication that the Mary mentioned is Jesus' mother. Third, Matthew is not part of Jesus' family. Fourth, there is no evidence that Mariamne y Mara refers to Mary Magdalene. Fifth, there is no mention in the New Testament that Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene or anyone else. Sixth, there is no mention in the New Testament that Jesus had a son. Seventh, if you were Jesus of Nazareth, would you really name your son Judas? Eighth, Joseph should be vocalized Joseph, who then could not be Jesus' brother mentioned in Mark 6:3 and Mark 15:40. Ninth, the so-called James ossuary, which was assumed to have come from the Talpiot tomb, was photographed and in circulation in the 1970s before the Talpiot tomb was ever discovered. But there is even more evidence that shows the Talpiot tomb is not the real tomb of Jesus of Nazareth. To share that evidence with us, our guest today is Dr. Daryl Bach, research professor of New Testament studies at Dallas Theological Seminary. He is one of the leading New Testament scholars in the world and was asked by Ted Koppel to be one of the guest scholars to critique the Discovery Channel special after it aired. We invite you to join us today on the John Ankerberg Show and learn why the family tomb of Jesus is a story full of major holes, false assumptions, and false facts. Welcome to our program. Today we're going to talk about the Discovery Channel's Lost Tomb of Jesus special that aired just a short time ago. And it's a real privilege to have Dr. Daryl Bach, research professor of New Testament at Dallas Theological Seminary, with us. He is known around the world, trusted, looked to. In fact, Ted Koppel asked him to come and appear on the program with him on the Discovery Channel after the special on the Lost Tomb of Jesus aired to critique it historically. And so, Daryl, we're really glad that you're here. The researchers that put the special together on the Lost Tomb of Jesus, they argued that 10 small bone boxes called ossuaries that were discovered in 1980 in a Jerusalem suburb called Talpiot supposedly held the bones, the remains of Jesus of Nazareth and his family. And this is important because this is a blow to Christianity, the historic faith that has been held by Christians for 2,000 years. Talk about the importance of the resurrection. If Jesus' bones were found in a grave, what does that mean to Christianity?
Well, in short form, it means that the message that the church preached was a complete fabrication and lie. And the idea that there is a bodily resurrection after death goes under because Jesus' bones are still there. And they had no concept of a spiritual resurrection where just part of you went up and was recreated by God. Resurrection as preached was always the idea that the entire person was renewed by God and was made eternal.
Yeah, the Apostle Paul actually said you could walk away from Christianity if you don't have a physical, bodily resurrection of Jesus Christ from the grave. In fact, he said in 1 Corinthians 15:14, if Christ has not been raised, your faith is worthless. You're still in your sins, and those who die as Christians, that is those who fall asleep in Christ, are lost. And further, if only in this life we hope in Christ, we're to be pitied more than all men.
That's correct. And so this is a central claim that is associated with this find. If Jesus' bones were around after 3 days, then that message has been nullified.
We're going to come back to that. But the fact is, let's move on. What's the basis for them saying that this tomb is Jesus' family tomb? The reason? They say it's because the people named in this tomb, there were 10 ossuaries that were cataloged, and 6 of them had inscriptions on it. And they say that the names in this tomb are all family members of Jesus. They are mentioned in the New Testament, and the names were Jesus, son of Joseph, Maria, Matthew, Mariamne Imara, Judas, son of Jesus, and Joseph. Now, let's start with the fact that all of the scholars seem to have a question about every one of those names, and let's go through the list. Let's start with Jesus himself. Obviously, if this is not Jesus of Nazareth's tomb, then everything else falls to the ground. Talk about what Rachmani put into his catalog, and where Kloner talked about the name Yeshua, son of Joseph, and then he had a what after in his catalog.
Well, Rachmani had a question mark about Yeshua because the inscription involved in this particular tomb is extremely sloppy. In fact, even the special called it graffiti-like. Unlike most inscriptions on tombs, the letters run into one another as opposed to being distinct. So this immediately raises a question. If this were the ossuary of Jesus, who had been presupposed to be the possible Messiah of Israel, and you were creating a bone box, an ossuary, to lay him in after a year, after his body decomposed, because the process here was you died, you had an initial burial, and then the body decomposes and you're left with the bones after about a year. And this was called the second burial. The second burial involved a placement in an ossuary. And as a result, when you had a year to prepare this bone box, you're going to place these precious bones into this bone box and you scratch the name Jesus on the side. Very, very unlikely.
Let's talk about some of the experts that were used in the special and what they said about Jesus. First, Stephen Fong, president of the University of the Holy Land, was used as an expert and appeared in the Discovery Channel special. But what we didn't hear on the special is what he said about the name of Jesus and the main thesis. Stephen Fong said that he couldn't confirm the name Jesus. In fact, he says it may read Hanun. Then he said that he totally rejects the movie's main thesis, that is, that this is Jesus' family tomb. And he has particularly withering criticism of the statistics and how they were gathered. That's Stephen Fong. You met with him and had lunch with him just a few days ago in Israel. Tell me how the conversation went.
Well, he basically confirmed what you've said, that he thinks this is not certain that the name is Yeshua and that it could be a variation. Rachmani in his catalog put a question mark by the first two letters in this inscription because they do, in fact, run together. And we could look at this and actually compare the inscription. We could compare it to another inscription of a famous person, Caiaphas, and I think you would see the difference very, very clearly.
In fact, Earl, let's do that right now. Show us in terms of what you're talking about.
Well, if you look at the screen here, you're going to see two inscriptions. And to the right side is Caiaphas right here. And you'll notice how each letter is distinct. In fact, the graphic has the Hebrew letters written underneath it. And then if you come over here to the Jesus inscription, which is from Rachmani's catalog done in 1994, you'll see this mark here at the start, which looks like a cross. It actually is nothing but an alignment marker for the lid. And then you come across and you'll see how these letters run into one another in a very sloppy manner. It's slanted as opposed to being straight. And so the description of this inscription as graffiti-like is actually very accurate. In fact, it's the sloppiest inscription that one could have. You can look at some of these other inscriptions on this page, which also come from this tomb, and they're much, much clearer.
All right. Talalan looked at that. What did she say? And she was also one of the experts used in the special.
Well, she expressed great doubt that this would be a revered figure like Jesus. This was also my immediate reaction when I saw the inscription the first time. Because again, this is an honored figure, and even though this ossuary is fairly plain, you would think that the inscription would be fairly clear.
Yeah, let's be clear of what the people in the Discovery Channel special are saying. They're saying, look, Jesus' bones were taken over here, his name was scribbled on the deal, and the fact is, then they went out and preached that he physically rose from the dead.
Yeah, in fact, let me back it up a little bit and take you through the entire sequence of what has to take place. Whenever I get a theory like this, the first question I ask is, what does that culturally require in order to be in place? So let's assume for the sake of discussion this is true and then play it out. Well, first of all, they have to be able to procure a tomb. This family is from Galilee. They've come down to celebrate Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. They're planning to go back. So when Jesus ends up being arrested and crucified, that's a surprise. They don't have a tomb. They've got to procure a tomb. They've got to procure a tomb for a controversial figure. They've got to do that secretly somehow, and they've got to have the money to do it. They've got to have the means to do it because these tombs are not cheap. So they try and do that. Now they got to get the body somehow. After they get the body, they've got to, again, by stealth, get the body into this tomb. They've got to wait for a year, allow it to decompose. You've got your ossuary sitting there waiting for Jesus to be put in it. You graffiti-like scratch it on the thing. You take these honored set of bones, put them in the ossuary, cover up the lid, walk out of the tomb, and immediately go into the town square and preach Jesus as raised from the dead, leaving no remains behind, knowing that that body is sitting there. It's just not credible.
All right, let's take the second name. Maria, supposedly Jesus' mother, Mary. What do you make of that?
Not much. It's a talpiot Mary. We've got a talpiot Jesus. We've got a talpiot Mary. We don't know anything else about who this figure would be.
Yeah, let's talk about the number of names.
If you look at it this way, Jerusalem has a population of somewhere around 80,000. Some people would say a little less, some people a little more. You would have 16,000 Marys walking around because one out of every five women in town is going to be a Mary. My joke is that when Israeli boys were growing up, they would dream of marrying a Mary because almost for sure if they're going to marry a woman, the chances are excellent it's going to be a Mary.
All right. And there is no evidence to say that this is Mary, Jesus' mother.
No. I mean, because there are so many Marys around. Now, the claim of the special, and we'll look at this, is that it's the cluster of names that's important. It's not the individual names. They want to put them together and say, it's unusual to get this cluster of names in one tomb. And in one sense, that's true. You know, we do have 1,000 names out of 2,600 plus that have been 2,600 plus ossuaries that have been found. We do have right around 1,000 names. And this is the first cluster that has had this combination of names. So it is a little bit unusual. But at the same time, you've got to also go one at a time in order to make sense out of it all.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about two more, namely Judas, the son of Jesus, as well as Matthew. The New Testament does not know either one of these two, but we've got them as part of the family, so we'll talk about that when we come right back. All right, we're back. We're talking with Dr. Darrell Bach, professor of New Testament at Dallas Theological Seminary. And he was one of the guests that Ted Koppel had to critique the Lost Tomb of Jesus, the Discovery Channel special. And Darrell, we got the fact that they're saying there's six names, a cluster of names that are all known in the New Testament, part of Jesus' family. So therefore, this is an outstanding example. And at 600-1, this must be the fact of Jesus' tomb, his family tomb. Problem is you got three names that shouldn't be in there. Okay, one of them is Matthew. Let's talk about that first.
Well, that's real quick. There is no record of anyone named Matthew in Jesus' family. The special claims, well, this is Jesus' special disciple who wrote the first gospel. But you can't have this both ways. If Matthew's in there, you don't have a family tomb. Or if you do have a family tomb, you've got other people creeping into the figuring, and that just complicates everything in terms of the math. But he doesn't belong there if it's a family tomb. And so that's an ossuary that's there that shouldn't be.
Yeah. Second one would be Judas, son of Jesus.
Well, this assumes that Jesus is married and that he had children. And there is no evidence for this, not only in the New Testament, but outside the New Testament. We went through this in great detail during the Da Vinci Code discussion when Dan Brown claimed that Jesus had a daughter in France. Okay, now we've got Jesus having a son in Israel, and we've got them in two different locations. So I guess Jesus actually is omnipresent.
Yeah, so that's a non-starter. Then the third one is you got Mariamne Imara. And they're saying that that actually is a reference to Mary Magdalene, and therefore we got some evidence that Jesus and Mary were married.
Yes, they have, and the way they do that is to do a DNA test, and to suggest that the person that was in the Mariamne of Talpiot box and the Jesus of Talpiot box, that they don't biologically match. Their DNA doesn't match, so they must be married. But that's crazy. All it shows is that they're not biologically related. And if you tested me for who I wasn't related to in Dallas, what you would expect is a non-match. And you don't know from the non-match if she's related to another male in the tomb. So there are just a lot of problems with that suggestion as well.
What about the idea that Mariamne is referred to in some of the Gnostic Gospels, Acts of Philip and so on?
Well, this is a suggestion from Francois Bauvant, that has a professor at Harvard who's an expert in these texts, who's made this suggestion. They actually has debated which Mary we're talking about in the Acts of Philip. That's the first thing to say. And then the second thing to say is that Francois Bauvant, after he saw the show, came out and made a statement saying, yes, I've suggested that that in the Acts of Philip this identification exists, but I don't buy this theory at all.
Right. He said it's actually science fiction that Jesus and Mary would be married.
Exactly right.
All right. Let's take another one that they're trying to sneak in, and that is the fact of James, the brother of Jesus. What's wrong with that?
Well, the problem here is that the boxes come from different dates. The James box was said to be out there in 1976. This find is in 1980. The dimensions aren't right. They're off by several centimeters. Amos Cloner, who oversaw the original dig at Talpiot, personally spoke to me in his living room when I was in Israel and said, you might get a little bit of a deviation on measurements, but you won't get a deviation as large as the difference between these two boxes. The third thing is the box found at Talpiot was plain, whereas the James ossuary has an inscription on it, so it doesn't match at all. So you can't pull the James box in at all. The number 10 ossuary that is supposedly this stealth, magic, disappearing, conspiratorial ossuary is actually a plain ossuary that was set aside because it didn't have anything of evidentiary value to give to anybody because there was nothing on it.
So we have six names, seven with James, and they're all in doubt, or there are three that shouldn't even be there, period. What does this tell you?
Well, what this does is it invalidates all the statistics because the statistics assume, in most cases, all the names or at least most of the names. I believe the Discovery Channel ran one set of statistics where they didn't put in some of the more questionable names. And one site that ran these names and put in all the variables that we've discussed said that the odds ran from 1 to 18, which was the most favorable. That is, out of 18 tombs, only one has a chance of being Jesus, all the way up to 1 to 5 million. That was the range, depending on how you set these various parameters that we've been talking about.
You've appeared with Ted Koppel on Discovery. You've been with ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN at one time or another. Your picture is all over the tube when these Jesus new radical theories come out. And you give the historical evidence that shows the Christian faith is what the Christian faith has always said it is. Now, tell me how, this is behind the scenes, tell me how the experts were used in the special.
Well, the interesting thing about this special is it's managed to do something that most finds rarely do, and that is to bring liberal, conservative Christians and Israeli archaeologists all into one camp. Usually there's huge debate. They all agree, virtually without exception, that this has little chance of being Jesus' family tomb. And even the experts that they used on the show since then have come out and commented that this is not the case. Frank Moore Cross, who identified the inscriptions for them, made a statement, he doesn't buy this theory at all. William Deaver revealed it on the Koppel Show. Stephen Fallon, who we've talked about when I interviewed him, said he doesn't buy it either. The Tal Alon, who helped do the names, she not only said that she doesn't believe it, but that she felt like a hostile witness for a murder in doing the show. She felt so set up by the way they went about interviewing her. Francois Bovin, who we've already mentioned, said he doesn't buy the way they've used the connection out of the Acts of Philip. So every expert who they interviewed for a point of fact in the special has denied the hypothesis. Beyond that, Amos Cloner, who oversaw the original excavation, said about this special, there was a major inaccuracy about every 5 minutes in this special.
What's happening is that the special didn't get peer review, goes to the public, and boom, you have this big splash. You sell a lot of books. What are we going to do in the future? Because a lot of people don't know the historical background. They don't know the ins and outs of what we're talking about. What's your advice?
Well, this is happening now pretty regularly, and I think my basic advice is that whenever you hear one of these announcements, take 3 deep breaths, have a coffee or tea or whatever it is you like to drink, and then let the vetting take place in public that's going to take place. That's usually going to take a few weeks to sort itself out as there's this flurry of activity about, is this true, could it possibly be, that kind of stuff. And then the dust will settle, and you'll really be in a much better place to assess what the claim is.
You grew up in a Jewish home. You were not a believer until you were what, in college?
In college.
Why did you put your faith in Jesus Christ?
So I became convinced that he really did rise from the dead, and that there was a message here that was unique for people. It was a message about reconciling a wayward person to the living God, something that God takes the initiative to do and something that God accomplishes in such a way that it can be guaranteed. And that's why the resurrection is so important. The resurrection is important, and the totality of the resurrection is important, because what we're talking about is a living Jesus who still impacts people and still impacts history.
All right, next week we're going to come back to this topic, and we're going to talk about the historical case for the resurrection and the facts that have not been disproved by the skeptics. And we're going to talk about the DNA evidence that was gathered at the Talpiot tomb, a little bit more about that, what it means, and the statistics, how they were gathered, how they were used. So I hope that you'll join us.
For additional resources, log on to jashow.org. That's jashow.org.